C1PH. Number 4A, B.
Then we come to the third subject of soul. Here I have written physiology regards body as man, whereas we must define man as God's image and likeness. Again, it's a metaphysical step which says to us, do you know what man is? Is man a physiological concept? Or what is he? Or is he the image and likeness of God? And we have to decide on that question within our own consciousness. By the way, is it all right if I go through this subject the way I have done last? Is that quite easy to follow? All right. So, we shift the third gear, and it's mostly the crux of the whole situation, namely that something crops up in one's mentality and says, all right, that's fine, yes, I trust in spirit, but what about my body? The body is that stubborn thing which pops up and seems to have a good talk with us and tells us all sorts of things which are not right. We don't mind if the body talks to us about all the things which are right, though we should mind both ways, because body is not man. Man is only the idea of God. And this is the point here that Mrs. Eddy wants to bring out, that we have to free ourselves of a physiological concept of man, and regard only man as that which is the idea of God. And patients always say, well, that's the most difficult part, to see that one's body, which one feels, has nothing to do with us, has nothing to do with man. But this step has to be done, and has to be done consciously. We have to free ourselves of the sense that our body is our manhood. And then naturally when we get further, we must see that we can leave the concept of manhood right out of our consciousness and just see that the only thing that's going on is God and His idea. But here we have the first step to take, and to be clear that what the body speaks to us is not man, and not us. How can we see that? Through the subtone of mind is shown man is not a combination of spirit and matter, wherein man as the image of infinite mind is believed to be subject to non-intelligence. It's again that old story that we start by seeing that man is not a mixture of spirit and matter, and that that mixture is not subjected to non-intelligence, to matter, but that man is the image of mind. So we have the tone of mind, and the reverse, that we believe that man is that which lives mentally, consciously, intelligently, in a body. There's a very strong belief that we just feel we live in this body, that we think in this body, that all the thinking that is going on about me is going on in the body. It's a terrific strong belief. Actually, it's a belief of thousands and thousands of years of evolution. But what a freedom we gain when we once sit down and say, now, what is man? Who am I? Am I the idea of mine, or what am I? And one gets an enormous freedom, naturally, soul as mind, enormous freedom, when one sees that all that there is true about man is idea, and that idea is not in body. All right, if we have seen that, then we can go to the second step of spirit, of soul as spirit, man has not gradually evolved through all the forms of matter into the likeness of spirit. But in the eternal chain of existence, man is uninterruptedly wholly spiritual. Yes, that's the thing, you see, which we have to deal with and see, all right, if man is idea, then man has not evolved through a million of years, and evolved through all modes of matter so as to become more and more spiritual, more and more spiritual, until finally he is only spirit. This is mostly regarded as the view of the evolutionists. They at least have made that big step in advance of Darwin that they feel that the destiny of man is spirit. Whereas in Darwin everything was material evolution, and from Darwin naturally communism has taken its historical materialism and therefore regard only matter as able to evolve. So in this century at least we have in the last 10 or 20 years theories of evolution which go further than that. They are not yet purely spiritual, but which say at least that man, since he appeared on this planet, has no more evolved materially, which is quite an enigma to them, because everything else in the natural history, in nature, has evolved in that time. One believes that the first man, which had somehow a human form, appeared about a million years ago, and that in that time of 1 million years, other branches of nature, like fishes and birds and vegetation and so, have undergone an enormous lot of mutations and have evolved and diversified them enormously, but not man. That the moment man appeared on this planet, that from that moment on, only his consciousness evolved. And no evolutionist can explain that. And they take it as seeing, as a proof, that the destiny of man is not to evolve more and more materially and physiologically, but that he is destined to evolve spiritually. And if one takes views like Teilhard de Chardin, well, he feels that the destiny of man and the final form of man is spirit and completely free from matter. But it's still an evolution through the stages of matter to reach finally spirit. Whereas here we see that that's why it is so important to start with mind, soul as mind, and see the identity of man is idea. If we have fixed that once in our consciousness, then that frees us in soul as spirit from the belief that we have to evolve materially. An idea can't evolve material, an idea is already complete. So we see that man has existed in completeness all the time, and that his evolution is spiritual and completely spiritual. All that we witness humanly is really a retrogression of the material element of man, and the others call that evolution. Whereas we see that the idea of man has existed ever, and therefore the idea man has evolved spiritually and only spiritually. And by evolving spiritually, it has become less and less material. Less and less material. And that is being regarded as material evolution. But it isn't. It's spiritual evolution. Then we come to soul as soul. Man is not a bodily structure of organs, but the spiritual identity. See, now man is defined not as a structure of organs, as a body, but as a spiritual identity. And we can see that very easily, that man is a spiritual identity and not a corporeal identity. If we take any invalid, people who have perhaps lost part of their body, a leg or a hand or an eye or anything like that, who therefore, from the point of view of physiology, should be only half a portion, but we can see that they are a very big portion, that they show usually much more manhood, much more dignity of manhood than the other ones. Meaning that man really is a spiritual identity independent of the body. It's there where Mrs. Eddy says, a man's a man for all that, so he remains man, no matter if we take out some organs out of his body, if we amputate the limb or anything like that, he is man, he's a spiritual identity. Then as principle, we have here physiology and its allied sciences do not define the real man. Can you see, every time she comes to the subtone of principle, she takes in the other sciences as a counterfeit to the science of being. It's always subtone of principle usually is, what do the other authorities, what do the other sciences say to the subject? Physiology and its allied sciences do not define the real man, the image of God. They define the mortal body. She takes here anatomy that defines man structural. She takes physiology that measures man according to the size of his brain and the strength of his muscles and so on. She takes, phrenology.
Yeah.
Takes phrenology and says they define a man according to the cranium and so on. See? So they never really define the real man. But you know, she has written that 100 years ago. Today they wouldn't write that. That chapter on physiology smells a bit old. Oh, don't crucify me. But really, it's saying something very positive, because it shows that if Mrs. Eddy has written this in an age where it was new, and that she has trusted that her new idea will leaven mortal thought and scientific thought in the world, then we should be glad that it has leavened scientific thought to that extent, that after 70 or 100 years, these statements are common ground. So if they smell old, as I said, it's really honoring Mrs. Eddy's discovery, showing that she was right, that it is going to leaven thought in the world to the extent of accepting what she said. So I think we have to be aware, very much aware, that we are not going to be old Orthodox Roman Catholics who believe in a text that is old and feel that text, because it's old, it's sacred, and therefore nothing has to be added. I always say to myself, if Mrs. Eddy were here today, is anybody here to believe that she would write a textbook the same as she did it 100 years ago? Nobody would believe it. Nobody who has any sense would believe it. So if it's a sacrilegious thing to say that this chapter smells a bit old, it isn't. It is something very necessary to say, because only then we are becoming aware of a very important point, I feel today. Just as we take the Bible as a sacred book, as a book of revelation, we take the textbook as a book of revelation. in which both books define the fundamental science of being. And therefore we have to study these books as what they are, but not to repeat endlessly the same statements, but to take the science of it and translate it into the language of today, into the subjects of today. And Mrs. Eddy was writing her textbook, she didn't know anything of what's going on in the modern world. At her time, there were not one single synthetic drug, not one. At her time, she didn't know about Madame Curie, though she was just beginning to come into the focus. She didn't know anything about Einstein, she didn't know anything about Planck, she didn't know anything about Schroeder, she didn't know anything about Schrödinger, nothing about Niels Bohr, nothing about anything that has happened. Did she know anything about cybernetics? No. And yet, what is cybernetics? Cybernetics, only a few years old, is really an approximation of what she has seen as the four, as the working of the four. Well, if we do what they do, repeating and repeating always the same statement from Mrs. Eddy, having for everything that happens in the world a quotation from Mrs. Eddy, we are not honoring Mrs. Eddy. We are burying her. We are burying her in a statement which is finite. But we resurrect her whole revelation if we study the textbook lovingly, conscientiously, not to know the single sentences and to repeat endlessly the single sentences, but to see the structure of being. Having seen the structure of being, we can lift it right out into the new language of the sciences today. Then we can touch, and then we can talk with the scientists of today. Otherwise, no. Otherwise, no. Otherwise, we speak a language that they don't understand. They don't understand it. A week ago, I gave a public lecture in Zurich on the new science, I called it, with the subtitle, The Breakthrough of the Christian Science Concept of Science in the Other Branches of Sciences. And there were quite a lot of new people coming along, mostly men, mostly students and intelligent, cultured people, students of medicine, students of chemistry, students of physics, and so on. And I gave that talk. And actually, all the other ones were there too, those who have been studying Christian Science for 20 years with us or so. And who you think understood what I said best? The new ones. And why? Because I talked in their language. And the other ones said, oh, that goes too high. No. Just because I used about 5 or 6 new terms. Well, that to me was a sign that we have to learn the language of today. We love the textbook, and you know I love the textbook, or I wouldn't give these talks. I mean, nobody will be able to criticize me that I have finished with the textbook or anything like that. I always study it and always try to get the deeper science of it. But we have to learn the new language. Or we are in the same position as the Roman Catholic Church that up to recently were giving their what you call masses or their services in Latin. In Latin. Well, we speak Latin very soon, if we go on like this. We speak Latin very soon. because this is a language which is very specified, but the world speaks another language. Well, why did I say this? Yeah. Because we were of the tone of principle, and we were saying that always at the tone of principle she brings in the other sciences, and I was saying that today these other sciences wouldn't say the same thing as they did 100 years ago. So in that way, many things in the textbook are no more so of the same actuality. Would you say actuality? Yes, yes. And therefore, Mrs. Eddy wouldn't write the textbook the way we have it today. Well, she's no more here, she can't rewrite it, we have to have it like it is. It's the same thing with the Bible. We have to take the Bible as it was written 2,000 years ago, and we can't say, well, say it in plain English. And we have to learn the old language of the Bible, and we have to learn the old language of the textbook in order to understand that revelation. There's no harm in it. Because if I want to know what in the East they have written, I have perhaps to learn Sanskrit, or I have to learn Greek if I want to know what Plato and so on has written. I have to learn an old language. But that doesn't mean that if I learn the old language, that from now on I have to talk on in the old language. I have to learn the old language in order to understand the book. But then I can translate it. I must translate it into the new language. Yes. Now, we go on to soul at life. By the methods of physiology, man subjects himself to a higher form of idolatry, to the idols of civilization. Here again, he shows that the idols of barbarism are just compensated or exchanged for new idols, which we are no more acknowledging as idols, but they truly are. That the idols of civilization are that we bow down to all sorts of things as a savior. To medicine, to hygiene, to baths, to exercise, to flannel and so on, because we bow down to something which is not of a spiritual nature. And so they are fatal to health and longevity. I think it's a good thing that we realize how we have idols, because when we go to school and we learn for the first time something about our ancestries in the mythological age and how they had idols, when we read, say, the prophets and so on, Isaiah, and he describes how they made idols and bowed down to idols, we think, how funny, how backward they were, awfully backward. Huh? They went into the woods and cut the tree and burnt the branches. I cut out just one piece, and then this made a picture, and then they painted it, and then they put it on up in their house, and then they bowed down to what they have made. Funny, huh? Backward. We are so much advanced. We take all the rotten stuff out of tar and so on and distill it and then out of and throw away a lot. Some of the tar goes then on the street and making roads. And some of it, a little bit, we keep back. And then we make out of it a drug. And then when we have made that drug, we try to find out where it can do any good. And if we find out it can do here and there good, then we bow down. Exactly the same. Say, this is good. This is my God. If I am in trouble, here I have it. I have my idols. Just as 2,000 years ago. Just the same. They are only that we have more idols than they had. They usually just had one or two at home. But we have a whole cupboard full. Yeah. Just full of them. No, not a chest. What do you call a cabinet. Yeah. All right. Well, you know, you always know what I want to say, even if I say the opposite. Nobody can't say that we are not talking out of inspiration and liberation. That words don't matter. Yeah. Then as truth, it shows by rising in thought. See again the sense of resurrection of soul, by rising in thought above the material standpoint, above body, above the physiological concept, we pioneer in opening the way in Christian Science. It shows now that if we really lift ourselves out of a mortal concept of body and see man as idea, that this step is a leavening step in the whole field of mortal thinking. And truly, more and more today, in the way of biology, in the way of medicine, these scientists come more and more to the realization that man is something more and something very different than just a physiological concept. And so somebody has to pioneer in this way. Then, as love, I have to hurry a little bit, as love, man's heaven is on earth. Truth practiced. It is here where that statement comes in that it says that truth is revealed, it only needs to be practiced. And then shows how really man's heaven is here. That the moment we have the revelation of truth, and practice is the translation of that truth to our situation, then we really have heaven on earth. Then heaven is translated on earth. Well, this is the tone of soul. I just recapitulated quickly in my terms, but the main thing really is to see the 1, 2, 3 we have done today, you see. The first metaphysical step is to see, all right, if I want to regain dominion over the body, over physiology, what have I to do? First subject of mind has said, turn away from physiology. Turn to the divine mind. All right. The second step has said, if you do that, then trust in that divine mind. Put all your trust, put all your reliance on that understanding of the one mind. That's tone of spirit. Then, if we do that, if we put all the trust in spirit, then naturally we begin to see that man must be regarded as a spiritual idea, as a spiritual identity, and not as a corporeal identity. Therefore, the whole thought has to rise out of a sense that body and man are one and the same thing. But that we have to see, as she shows here in the subtone of mind, that man is the image of mind. All right. If he is the image of mind, then as spirit we can see, then he was always an idea and therefore has only evolved spiritually, never materially. And that we don't have to evolve further materially, but only spiritually. That's our evolution, that's our future. And by seeing that, we find really our true spiritual identity, completely free from body. And then we can say to all the other sciences, in principle we can say, you know, what you define as man, we don't believe it. That's finished. We don't believe these sciences like phrenology, like physiology, like anatomy, and so on, but we believe now that the authority of divine science defines man rightly. And this frees us from bowing down to body, obeying the body, asking the body what are the conditions for our life. Do we have to exercise the body? Do we have to brush the body? Do we have to give the body this and that in order to have life? We get rid of these idols of civilization. And so naturally we pioneer into a new field of truth. And that new field of truth will again reopen paradise. It will bring heaven down to earth. It will bring that heaven, that soul sends to body. Like she says then at the end, that in order to understand the body, we have first to understand what is soul.